Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Masonic Effects. Just seems to happen, doesn't it? I very rarely do that, play West End Blues. That's by John Oliver, 1924. John Oliver's band. But that horn is claimed to be the first time the trumpet was used as a riff instead of being part of the background of a band, and whether it is or not, it's just something that it's just remarkable. Young Louis Armstrong, little boy on the street, a little beggar boy on the street in New Orleans, little black kid being ignored, and but joyful. You know, he's even described at that age as being a happy little boy, being taken in by a Jewish family and raised and taught, and then the talent. And you remember, we all remember that iconic smile. He was an ambassador, wasn't he? Yes, he became a legend around the world. And then here, a foolish old man like me, I just, you know, it's just part of, here I am in a country. He visited here, and we know that. But he shared something that was, his story shares something. It's the music brought people together. And it was like you couldn't be beaten down. He couldn't be shamed or harmed or hurt. He just prevailed. And it's a stark reminder for the likes of me that have started off with much more privileged life than he had, that if men like that can grow and do that, then hadn't I ought to give that? Let that be part of my personality too. I couldn't ever say that circumstance changes us, but I think for intelligent people it does. He was a bright enough kid. He was no fool. Look at the music he produced, and he was so likable. Mm-hmm. He's welcomed and respected by so many people. Anyway, that's the full version, the 3-minute, 21-second version of West End Blues, A Treat for the Ears. Let yourself, today, I hope you'll let yourself feel that vibe wherever you are. If you boys tuning in from Brazil again, hello, and it's a pleasure. And you gents in Japan, we really need to get together, my goodness. To think that there are Masonically inclined people in Russia tuning in, we don't forget that you're there. Oh, the news is what it is. It's always been that conflict, tensions, whatever it is. But so have you and I. We've always made these connections. We're not state governments. We're not one of the major estates. We are who we are. We have common beliefs that we cherish, things that are important, and we find our way to those, sharing those beliefs from our different cultures and different backgrounds. It's hard to believe sometimes that the roll of the dice that produces us, you think of all the vagaries and influences that make us distinct. And yet when we start to talk about sharing ideas, it's not hard to trip over some pretty interesting and beautiful notions, beauty itself. Let me try this on you. I'm just for shits and giggles. I wonder about the simplest things, and I'm sure I'm not the only one in the world. I've been sitting here giving myself, for how many years, I've given myself permission to publicly just share this love of poetry and start off with somebody reading poetry. And when I was in my crib, no, far from it. But it speaks to me. It's like music. There's music that's inspirational. I don't always get what the kids are finding inspiring, and my goodness, if I did, wouldn't they be shattered? They're on the cutting edge that I was on many, many years ago, or at least we thought we were. And then when I think back of that, the real cutting edge was that age of composition. Imagine being the rock star of your age, Puccini and Beethoven, Fidelio, his opera, and Vivaldi. You know, just imagine they were the rock stars. These massive productions, never before done. They were the first rock concerts. You think about it, opera was the first form, brought people together, theater, lighting, music, song. And we call it, you know, a concert today. We're paying tribute to those early days. But well, it takes a while for people to wonder and ask the question: why is that so? It has such a following, and it's not popular. My goodness, no! But it has such a following. And if you close your eyes, you'd think you were talking about Freemasonry. It's not popular, but it has a following. Yeah, share the music. If something happened to us a while ago, we were fortunate. we have the, you and I have the advantage of hindsight that's accumulated, it's just been building up around us, and we could tap into it. It's not at the crack of the whip or, you know, toe a line and nothing like that. We try to bring, you know, in that whole question of inner awareness and all that stuff, we won't talk about that. It's just too uncomfortable here. And we find ourselves asking questions about ourselves. Do I like certain things? Am I attentive? Am I missing, you know, what am I missing in my rush to pay attention to live this lifestyle where I'm working to buy things and that don't really satisfy my needs, and then I end up working more to buy more things that don't really satisfy need. you know, I don't have all of the words, but you do. So we drag, we pull. We enjoy, we savor the ideas of enlightenment. I even love the word enlightenment. It just makes me feel, you know, truly, it just makes me feel like I'm elevated in some way, because it's just one of those beauty words, beautiful enlightenment values. Masonry emerged during the Age of Enlightenment, and that was a period characterized by a very strong emphasis on reason and knowledge and the arts. Well, of course it would then. It's like anything else. If you've lived with during the period of transition, like, do you remember, and I don't mean to be facetious, do you remember when before the age of cell phones, and do you remember before the age of phones, or individual phone lines? Do you remember that age? My grandparents' farm, and when I was a boy, we had party lines. That was not uncommon. And we were there during the transition. We've lived, and people like me have lived during that transition. But when I hear an old boy speaking pompously about the kids not realizing or not appreciating, I think, well, my goodness, that's nothing to do with the child. That's to do with time. In their time, there's things that they will be doing when they're young that by the time they reach my age will have passed. And maybe if they're fortunate, I always thought that I would love to have a holographic dogfight. You know, the early biplanes, and we could sit down over a table like a chessboard and see these holographic dogfights taking place, and you're the Red Baron and I'm Brown, and we're doing battle with all that a noble swagger, you know, when the dignity of war was still there, and men were dying. Age of Enlightenment. Many Enlightenment thinkers were Freemasons, and then they believed that the arts, including literature and music and architecture, were essential for the cultivation of the human mind and the advancement of society. Now, don't think people walked around with that notion in their heads. When you walk past a building, do you think of it as art? Well, they may have thought, well, you know, that's Baroque, or that's Gothic, or, you know, what they may have known that, but do you think the average person would know that? They would know that something looks pleasing to the eye, and they may stand in the cathedral and look up at the ceiling 100 feet up and look at these vaulted ceilings and this filigree that's supporting all this weight, and just truly appreciate the genius of the builders and the designers. And then, you know, it comes crashing down when we look at, you know, the battles that we've created, where the tradesmen have to struggle and fight with greed to get their fair share. Symbolism and ritual, it's known for that. That's what we do. The arts often served as a means to convey complex ideas and values through symbols and allegory. Well, today we're going to hear William Shakespeare's first sonnet. the arts have always allowed us to explore. And we could sit down instead of marching in the streets or trying to insult the powers that be. We allowed the arts to do it, to be edgy, to explore. And it still is. And our so-called establishment looks down their long, long tapered, elegantly tapered noses and says, oh, no, that can never be. We can't allow that to happen. And as soon as something that silly is leaking out of their mouth, change is on. It never changes. We look back, and we know this. We look back at the process. The new idea is what it is. It's repelled. We don't like it. It's too strange. It's not familiar to us. We push back. We criticize. We mock. Until it doesn't go away. The good ideas don't go away. Oh, the despots can try and do what they want to. You know, like in my country, we have this sense of fairness and community. And we have politicians have lost track of that. And it doesn't change us. It enrages us, but it doesn't change us. And we'll take the upside, if there is any upside to hubris. But we don't like it. I don't know if we can ever reclaim that territory. I know Rome banned hubris. You know, just didn't happen. Throw you in jail. You'd be fined. And then it became embraced. Time went on. But we use it. We use art and symbolism in our ceremonies and ways of teaching some complex moral and philosophical lessons. In education, we place a significant emphasis on self-improvement and education. But the arts, that's not to say we're going to push you into your desk and put a book in front of you. We're grown men. We do that willingly. We do that. We turn toward the fine arts because we find that we're curious about it. We're explorers. We want to know more. And if Yannick Séguin, the Canadian conductor, starts to interpret a piece of work at the Met where he's working, and they said the boy's got a decent job. Then, had I be intelligent, and they call it intelligent enough, to tune him in and listen to what he has to say, the man is—he's genius. And what if I said that in front of him? He'd be probably frowning at me because he's modest. There's some values that we might look at, say they're missing in the world, but are we paying attention really? So the art seems to be a means to inspire us intellectually and morally, and it encourages us. It encourages an appreciation for the arts, and that can lead to deeper understanding of our culture and history. Is this forcing an idea on you? Grow up, buttercup. No, nobody's forcing you to enjoy, to absorb the beauty of culture and the arts, the fine arts. They're there. You know, I think of Vladimir Horowitz sitting at the piano. Do you remember that? You know, that pixie smile, and then these long tapered fingers that were just. I swear. He was an angel. So do we use this? We can talk about unity and harmony, and we promote those ideas among ourselves and our little societies. But, you know, then we encourage ourselves to connect those values in our communities, connect with them in our communities. So that's why we have a fascination for the history. But we're not looking for sources to justify conflict and tensions and ruin. No. We want to learn the lessons so that we can avoid those tensions. Because nobody wins. Nobody wins. We're all in this together. That whole notion of that inclusiveness, the oneness. Mm-hmm. So when we are paying attention to, you know, Mozart or Christopher Wren, there's a reason. We're making historical connections, and that's contributed over the years. The beauty is it's contributed to this perception of Freemasons and Freemasonry as patrons of the arts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to note that Freemasonry is a diverse and multifaceted organization. Oh my goodness, that's could never say that enough. We have so many different degrees of interest in the arts. Some are emerging, some are very well cultivated. It's sort of the difference between eating and fine dining, you know? Everybody loves to eat. But fine dining, takes our company and our conversation to a whole new level. But we also know that there's some young mother with her two little kids living in poverty and putting her little ones to bed and sending them off to school hungry. And we can do something about that. And that's the kind of people we are. Nobody makes us do that. We do that because it's just the right thing. So that is how you, listeners to Masonic Effects, inspire. You are that. You're part of that cohort. You're part of that inspiration. And for that, I just love that. I love that contribution that you make, just your presence here. I thought today I love this part of the conversation, and I just anticipate, my goodness, I want to hear your part of the conversation. We need to sit down and talk, and I want to listen to your ideas. There's a musician who's no longer with us, except his music is, but he had this talent for making, and in my mind, I'm going to be very clumsy, no wrong notes. He had such talent and a will that he could work with anything. He was riffing on life. We can do that. I don't have the talent of an instrument. I wish, hope one day, who knows? But he did. And when he played with other musicians, played with them, he could pick up on any note that, or if they played a wrong chord, and it just, I don't know if the word's transition, I don't know what the word is, it just carry on flawlessly, as if what I might think of was a mistake, oh, I played a wrong chord, was there on purpose, was deliberate. Think of how beautiful. That, just think of the capacity to do that. For the likes of me, being able to take a misstep in a conversation or an encounter with somebody that's not doing their best, that's not known for making good decisions, that's just off, that's isolated, that's hurt and has been absorbed into their own minds, to be able to turn a phrase, turn a connection with that person. There's no wrong comment, no wrong person. Somebody screaming and yelling is on a continuum. The love and the hate, it's just different points on the spectrum. What are people trying to do? Get by the best way they can with what they have. Horrible when we look for the similarities. And here, you sit back, fill up your mug with your favorite beverage. If it's a sipping time where you are, I hope you have access to a Merlot, but just because. Or this time of year, it's a little early for me to be breaking out a drop of Taskers. And I'll wait until we're in the depths of winter and it's just howling and I need that peaty kind of warmth. In the meantime, a little Miles. Settle back. What do you take? What do you take? What's that do to your soul? What's that do to your mind? Miles Davis. Wow. Let the music connect. Let his music connect with the music inside you. Here. You can tell sometimes I'm influenced by the silliness and craziness. People waving flags with rude things all over them, and feeling quite proud of that. That's their expression of their some kind of freedom, I think. You know, those prisons without bars. Yeah. Freedom in Troubling Times. That's the title of the commentary today. One day, Masonry, and I'm talking here, you know, I don't tend to talk about, you know, our situation where I am on the planet, but today I am. One day, Masonry migrated to North America. It took root in Britain and Europe, but the stock on which it was based stretched further back in time than that, and well out of recent memory. When it landed here, it left behind class struggles and a devotion to imperialism. Oh, those notions were echoing, but there was something else going on here. This was much, much different. This is forests and, you know, rivers, and this was nature, and it seemed heavenly in a lot of ways. And it was harsh. No, it's not. You know, the weather was harsh, and you had to have your wits about you, and you needed skills to survive. And the intelligent people that came, the early traders and explorers, were able to make connections with the people that already lived here, the cultures that were already here, before we allowed the religious dogs and political dogs to kill their children. And I'm sorry, that's I don't even know if an apology is worthwhile. That's the reality here, little bodies. And when it landed, it left behind the struggles. You know, we had our own struggles here. There was something unexpectedly comforting that came with Freemasonry that remains with us to this time. That's rather just a statement, isn't it? It brought an idea for new immigrants that there was something bigger and unifying out there that brought mankind together. Until relatively recent, we look back on those times with a protective sense of nostalgia. Those were simpler and more perfect times. There is a tendency about truth. It is unrelenting. It is the thing that causes despots and authoritarians to manipulate history to draw out a story that favors them. Surprise, surprise. It's the thing, though, the truth that always prevails. Mm-hmm. Those days of innocent perfection have fallen away as the truth about authority came to light. Racism, abuse, negligence, those are facts. So too is denial of the disgust, scorn, and ridicule. Masonry may well be one of the most understated anecdotes to alienation in its many forms. Obsession, intolerance, hubris, addiction, resignation, they are all pushed aside by the messaging of a Masonic legend. Hiram brings us a world of possibilities in which we are free to create opportunities. It shatters myths about small towns and dark cities. It focuses on the best of human values carried in the breast of a good man. New ways of thinking came to North America one day. The Masonry continues to influence where it came from and where it goes. Now, Is that power? I don't know. Maybe it's just common sense. Oh my. Duke Ellington happened to be a Freemason. It's like holding that sip of wine on the tongue, just so that you allow the flavors to introduce themselves to you. Or brandy, and you warm it over a candle. Because we know that flavor, taste, and scent are enhancements. So inhale it. You inhale music like that. We're going to try and share something that I think is impressive. It's a sonnet, you know, one of the favorite poetic forms for on Masonic effects. 14 lines. Now, when we're done, you know, reading and studying, we're going to talk a little bit about an analysis of the work, of course. I'd like to ask you to do something. To sit back and think about the storyline or the messaging from those 14 lines. And then, in your own way, put it in proportion. Why do I take 14 pages to say something that is a mere shadow of what is said in these 14 lines? 14 lines. This style, just a little history, just to, you know, we're leaning over in our waiter has brought this very, very delicious, you know, when you, the coffee with a little cardamom in it, you know, just it's so thick and, oh, sweet. Yeah, and I'm sitting there just with my paper folded up reading it, and I'm thinking here, it's believed that the sonnet, and it's believed because it's out of time, and you know, it goes so back, that was created by a fellow by the name of Giacomo da Timi, and he was the leader of the Sicilian school under Emperor Frederick II. The Sicilian school was a small community of Sicilian and Italian poets that gathered around Frederick II. Most of them belonged to his imperial court in Palermo. And this Giacomo de Latini produced more than 300, you know, under his involvement, 300 poems of courtly love back between 2030 and 1230 and 1266. Huh, 13th century stuff. Then I won't get into the technical side of it, but you know, just because it's, you know, A-B. All right, we're not going to get in there. But this wasn't like constant. Giacomo's poetry doesn't conform with the Arabic predecessors did with it. It was defined as a new kind of lyric, and it survived the 13th century, and his poems appear not in 14, but rather 6 lines. Showing off, that's obvious. But Guettone de Zaro rediscovered the sonnet form and brought it to Tuscany, where he adapted it in Tuscan dialect in 1235 to over his lifetime, 1294. And he wrote over 250 sonnets. Mm-hmm. Now, it gets interesting. Among the host of other Italian poets that followed, the sonnets of Dante Alighieri and Guido Cavalcanti stand out. But later, the most famous and widely influential was Petrarch. I won't get into this. These are just sidebars. And Frederick, he's the king of Sicily from 1198, the king of Germany from 1212, and the king of Italy and Holy Roman Empire from 2020. Frederick, yes, he was the son of Henry VI of the Hohenstaufen dynasty and Queen Constance of Sicily. Glad you woke up with that. You had that question. I'm glad I'm able to be helpful. Here, this is the number one, William Shakespeare. And it introduces many of the themes that define the sequence. It's the beauty, the passage of human life and time, the ideas of virtue and wasteful self-consumption, and the love of the speaker that the speaker bears for the young man, which causes him to elevate the young man above the whole world. Oh, doesn't this shatter some of our vice and rigidity? That it opens only not only the entire sequence of sonnets, but the first mini sequence, and it's a group comprising of 17 sonnets, often called the procreation, because they each urge the young man to bear children as an act of defiance against time. Our immortality is in our children. Eh? Our immortality is the legacy of what we leave behind. And we continue to live on. Whether somebody knows your name or not, you think about it. Masonry teaches us that that's one of the coolest things of all. To be able to bring a smile to somebody's face and they don't know where it came from. They don't know that it was you and I that had something to do with it. And that's sublime. But man, that does that make us a small group of people on the face of the earth. And I tell you. So think about this. If was Will I Am Shakespeare successful? It goes from the fairest creatures we desire increase and talks about, you know, the beauty and the passage of human life. 14 lines from fairest creature we desire increase. Yeah, of course, we like it. Mm-hmm. That thereby beauty's rose may never die, but as the riper should by time decrease. And let's slow it down so we can savor it just for a moment. His tender air might bear his memory, but thou contracted to thine own bright eyes feed'st thy light's flame with self-substantial fuel. Making a famine where abundance lies, thyself thy foe. To thy sweet self too cruel. Thou that art now the world's fresh ornament, and only her herald at the gaudy spring, within time own bud purest thy content. And tender churl, make us waste and niggardly pity the world, or else this glutton be, to eat the world's dew by the grave and thee. The child might continue its beauty. Slow it down. Make us waste and niggardly pity. Don't let pity be part of your life, you know. Rise above. Wow. How does he do that? I would say you probably have a sonnet inside of you. 14 lines. Let's see what Coleman Hawkins does with that. Coleman Hawkins, he is distinct. He leaves us better after listening to his music. Remember when we concluded the last piece of history, we were talking about these fellows from Pennsylvania in Amsterdam and what they were experiencing. And it was a period of change and growth, and it was conversations happening that went on in La Bien Amie. We remember that lodge because it had such clear, it wasn't like the secretaries that are barely functionally literate. They left a story, articulate. And I pick it up with when the Pennsylvania brothers saw what they saw must have been very impressive. There were new furnishings that had been purchased and displayed. And that brothers, such that the brothers, when they first saw it, were, quote, besides themselves and were silent for a long time, not able to express in words what they saw. We've been there. Beautiful. Standing in a circle, the brothers ceremonially inaugurated the new furnishings. I like that. We cannot miss the quasi-religious tone of these proceedings, the celebration of the mundane. The procession stated very stately without any confusion in spite of the large number of brothers accompanied by the customary music. After it, the enlightened master of the visiting lodge, Le Chertari, expressed his profound pleasure in our work, and thus the lodge was closed. We know from other meetings in the 1780s that La Bien Amie was in its serious debt, but we do not sense a scaling down of its protocol or festivities. Instead, by 1784, its membership had risen to 81 members. It was a big lodge. Orations at this time make frequent reference to the excellence of harmony, or they condemn the conceit and the hypocrisy of men and comment upon the harmful and horrible nature of wrath. Tensions were happening, yeah? These were sentiments that almost never appear in Masonic literature. All this at a time when there was evidence of renewed quarreling between lodges. Oh my, it's not new. We didn't invent it. Yet the work of the lodge continued. Elections were held regularly and feasts were enjoyed with all loving harmony, says. And in the early 1787, at the height of a crisis provoked by Patriotin unrest, you know, people were upset with what was going on around, the orator calls for self-knowledge, which is founded on the power of reason, the law, and conscience. He tells his brothers that Freemasonry needs a constitutional restoration, and that this would be easier to achieve than a restoration of statecraft. The choice of terms is important. One of the most famous Patriotin pamphlets of the day, The Constitutional Restoration of the Dutch State, 1784 to 1786, argued for sovereignty in the people, but through the maintenance of elite leadership. It was an argument that had little populist appeal, but it would have struck the men of La Bien Amie as making good sense. Perhaps the orator is suggesting that the lodge is an easier place to achieve constitutional reform than is the state. In early 1787, the master, because he has allowed the election to be free, in effect gives his brothers in this lodge an unlimited freedom to hold an election. Out of it, the patriot publisher, Kreidenscheutz, was made the lodge's orator. At the same moment, some patriots were calling for the creation of National Assembly in the Republic. In his first speech, Kreidenscheutz exhorted his brothers to study the histories, foremost those concerning Freemasonry. Then he showed again new signs of his excellent ingenuity and unlimited knowledge of antiquity. Did he want them to think about its English origins? Did he believe that in its fundamental principles, the Masonic order offered a model of good government? We will never know for sure. But he might reasonably imagine that he did. I don't know if Masonic effects ever ends. I take away ideas and impressions from it, just like you do. We don't always have the refinement to be able to express ideas as clearly as you can. Find the words, embellish or improve. But it's curious that we have this, we pivot around this stuff called Freemasonry, and it brings us into conversation. And it's wonderful. It's not pretentious. It's not over the top. It is what it is. We explore. I looked at poetry and wondered. I had this feeling. It was almost like a, I don't know whether it was like an, I felt repelled. I can't do that. That's not something that a boy thinks of. That's wrong-minded. And then I began to understand where that kind of thinking came from and where it was generated. Woo-hoo! Not great. Not a great moment for humanity, eh? To be teaching people that they, because of their station in life, they ought not to be able to appreciate the fine arts. What the hell? That's arrogance. Huh? Of course, you, whatever your station in life, listen to the music. The music's in us, you know, all those corny kinds of things. You can be thinking in terms of the slogans. Yeah, somebody's advertising and trying to use every kind of thing that we love and appreciate as a hook, and, you know, to shill some product. But that's the outside world. In our conversation inside here and inside of us is something sweeter, something better, something more meaningful. And to all of the listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. It just brings it all together. Maybe you'll tune in next week to see if if we can pull another rabbit out of the hat on the Masonic effects and commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. Man, the world is never not needed kindness. And our version of it, I think, is exquisite. whether you're doing it and you know you're doing it openly, or you've evolved to the point where you have the confidence to do it anonymously, my goodness, it's just it's sublime. It's sublime. See you again soon. Random acts in your community and maybe one for yourself. Bye.